Hello and welcome back to the Smart Life Podcast Season 2. Now we wanted to start by just saying thank you to everybody that's been in touch around the past couple of episodes. We've covered some quite heavy topics, especially around getting to carbon zero, as well as how we can use smart home technology to improve care in the community. And of course we do love hearing from you. So if you've got any questions, any thoughts about anything that we've been chatting to our guests about, make sure you reach out to us at hello@beaconagency.co.uk. Now I'm taking a bit of a break this episode, but my co-host Jess Hadley is chatting about how we can use smart home technology to improve health and well-being. So without further ado, here is the Smart Life Podcast, Season 2, Episode 3.
Hello and welcome to Episode 3 of the second series of the Smart Life Podcast, exploring the latest in smart home technology and IoT. This podcast is created in conjunction with the Smart Home and Building Association and is produced by Beacon Agency. I'm Jess Hadley, and in today's episode, we'll be exploring how we can use technology to improve the nation's health and well-being. Here to talk to us today is Daniel Bastoni, UKI Channel Manager for Airthings. Airthings is the market leader in smart radon and indoor air quality monitors, using the most accurate technologies to create user-friendly products and solutions. Their mission is to get us to think more about the quality of air we breathe and the impact improving air quality can have on our overall well-being. Welcome to the podcast, Daniel.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
Well, we're just going to kick off with our first question, which is, improving our health and well-being has never been more important since COVID-19. So how do you think smart technology can help us all become a little bit healthier?
Ultimately, one of the great benefits of smart technology is the ability to use it to benefit our health and well-being. I mean, so smart technology allows you to do loads of different things, for example, automating, you know, lifestyle decisions, I think, in general. It's also got the ability to empower you with information, and that's what's really key here. So, you know, whether it be understanding more about your diet or your air quality or any other elements, I guess, of your environment, what these technologies are allowing us to do is to use the data that they're gathering to make smarter decisions about our lives. So, yeah, so now basically we can be better informed than ever before, and we can have a greater understanding about the pros and cons of our, I guess, our lifestyle, our environments, our habits, things like that.
And I guess it gives you an informed way of making the improvements that you need to make in not just the way that you necessarily are eating healthier or exercising more, but in things that you can do inside the home that would make a massive difference to your environment, which is obviously plays a big part in your sort of health.
Absolutely. And I think it's also worth considering the benefits that, you know, IFTTT brings us here. So if we consider air quality, which obviously are air things we do all the time, but just if we consider air quality as an example, our AirThings devices monitor, you know, loads of different components in your air, such as, you know, radon, humidity, airborne chemicals, temperature, etc., etc. And that helps you to understand the quality of your indoor environment and guide you to take the right course of action to improve it, which is fantastic. But, you know, if we just use the example, just one of those individual examples, let's take humidity. With IFT and smart technology, they allow us to automate the correct decisions. So to, I guess, explain, high humidity causes mold and damp, which we're all well aware in our wet country, which feels extremely wet today after the glorious weather of the last few months. But basically, it's actually hugely harmful, as you know, not just ugly. So over 20% of asthma is caused by mold, and it also exacerbates existing symptoms. And then I suppose on the other side, it's worth mentioning that low humidity can increase the risk of infection. So AirThings monitors your air quality, highlights areas of concern or danger. But by using IFT and smart plugs, and I suppose you can smartify dumb devices, so whether that be, you know, dehumidifiers as an example here, to automatically improve the environment. So, you know, to put that, I suppose, in context, your humidity rises above an acceptable level, which you've determined based on the advice that we at AirThings have given you. Your AirThings device communicates to your dehumidifier via, obviously, smart plug, when to turn on and off, and continuously manages the situation, which I think is hugely powerful. It's massive to have a setup where you know that you set the parameters of what is healthy and then live your life secure in the knowledge your devices are going to work together to provide what you've demanded, work for you. You know, you could argue that the truly healthy home can only really be so with smart technology.
I mean, that's also a really fascinating angle to for manufacturers that they need to consider, is how does those devices work with, as you put it, the sort of the dumb device that you already got in your home to achieve those great benefits? Do you think the responsibility for that side of it and informing consumers about how that improvements could be made lies with the manufacturer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, I don't think that the majority of people really understand IFT and the potential that it offers. I think most people get the principle of a lot of smart home products. A lot of them are becoming a lot more mainstream now. I think, you know, there's various examples where people who wouldn't consider themselves techie use smart products, right? Smart home products.
Yeah.
But absolutely, some of these benefits and the ways in which they can be used need to be simplified. And I don't mean simplified in a condescending or patronizing way. I just mean, you know, we are often guilty of being too complex and also not understanding how the consumer might view or feel about certain things. So, but yeah, I mean, ultimately, if the consumer doesn't understand what our products do, then that's our responsibility, basically.
Yeah, of course.
You know, how they can work, so yeah.
But AirThings does a really good job with the app. And they're bringing out more modifications in the future to make this data really easy to understand, because a lot of people may not have really considered the sort of how humidity affects them, how radon affects them, and how to sort of translate that data into something that means something to them. Could you talk a bit more about what AirThings is doing in that space to make it a bit more understandable and user-friendly to the end user?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's certain elements of our direction which we're still fine-tuning, but we've done a huge amount of work over the last year to try and, to the previous point, to try and, I guess, think about how we communicate. So, I mean, AirThings is originally a company, you know, born from scientists, right? And science is not always the most easy language for the layman to understand. And then we whack in a load of techies as well. We're not necessarily naturally going to have easy language and easy to understand language coming out of that. So what AirThings has been, you know, has done a really good job actually over the past year of doing is to really look at how we message things, where we can soften, where we don't want to soften, and ultimately how we can communicate better with our audience.
That sort of mission is getting more and more important now that we've had something like coronavirus hit in the last few months, and we've all been not only spending more time at home, but starting to worry about our health. We have recently conducted a survey into 150 consumers to ask them their thoughts on smart technology since COVID-19. 76% of respondents were thinking more about their health and wellness. And a staggering 63% of our respondents were saying that they would be more willing to purchase a smart device than previously if there was a compelling use case around how it might improve their health and wellness. Is that something that you think is going to be a big thing now from your perspective working at AirThings, that really now is the time consumers are going to start to think about not only their air quality in their homes, but looking for ways to improve their health more than they would have done previously?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So I think we were seeing a trend anyway. Mm. You know, in 2019, we were noticing in the UK, I'm saying it specifically, a trend, more general coverage in the press. Obviously, outdoor air quality has been a hot topic, and indoor air quality has been increasingly a topic as well. And we're starting to see, yes, a heightening of awareness. And then, of course, the pandemic comes along. We all sit at home, you know, not only during our evenings and our weekends, and more time because we're not going out much, but also during our working day. So of course, it's become increasingly relevant, and therefore, you know, it's not surprising, I guess, that the increased awareness that we were seeing has accelerated.
And it's a really key part in, obviously, maintaining virus management. So if you mentioned earlier, if the home has got lower humidity levels, again, viruses can transmit a bit easier than they would have done if it's kept at a sort of balanced rate. Is that something that you think smart technology companies should be starting to think about in the future, is how hopefully we won't have another pandemic to this scale again, but there is the possibility that that could happen. And that's something that they need to factor in, is how can we create solutions to help with some of the challenges that have come through lockdown by using the technology that we've already got.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the solutions lie in many different ways, whether it be, you know, companies such as Airthings, who obviously are really, I suppose, central to that home health discussion. But even other areas such as security, you know, if we look at how do we take deliveries safely, lots of different things about how we live our lives, which we can join up with smart technology to, I suppose, create a safe environment, not just a healthy environment, but a safe environment.
And it even comes down to like how we use and interact with sort of voice commands as well. So one of the things that my friends find hilarious is I have a yoga mode on Alexa, and it's a routine, and it turns my lights certain colour, and it sets my aromatherapy sort of diffuser off. So when I'm exercising and doing yoga, the room is set into a certain sort of temperature and way that I work. But actually, that's a really good thing in terms of obviously encouraging exercise, as well as also thinking about your mental health and doing things like that. It's been well documented that a lot of people have increased their use of apps such as Headspace through voice. Do you think it's, in from your perspective, do you think voice is a really good way to instruct consumers and be sort of the linchpin of starting to make the home healthier? Because it's the way that people could understand and interact with it to make these improvements.
Well, ultimately, yes, because I think voice is a simple way of managing your environment. And simplicity is really our key to success here, I'd say. With the mass market, having devices where you can offer simple voice commands to, and they can do all the tough, heavy lifting in the background, which you don't even have to see or know about, is what I think most people want. There, of course, are you know, groups who are quite happy to go into the back end, if you like, and fiddle around with settings, etc. And that's great. But I think for mass market, the simpler the better. Again, not to patronise or condescend, because that's not the case here. It's just simply that by simplifying it, we make it less of a decision and more just a part of your life,
which ultimately is going to get the biggest benefit for all of us. So that leads us really nicely into our sort of next topic area, which is, do you believe that we can implement this kind of technology solution sort of more at scale and actually look at how we can help communities? Is it worth getting local government involved to make these improvements? What we've seen as a really positive factor of lockdown is how communities have pulled together to help the most vulnerable. And actually, maybe it's worth local authorities looking at how they could instigate these technology solutions at scale so that it's installed by them and educated by them to the wider community.
I guess first of all is, you know, how easy is it to implement at scale regardless of local government, right? Mm-hmm. That's obviously the first piece there. And there's a couple of areas, I guess, to consider there. I mean, the first thing is we can now easily deploy a greater number of smart technologies than we maybe could have in the past. So, you know, just talking from our own examples, sensors now that look at loads of different sorts of things have become much smaller, much more affordable, much more easy to implement in any building in a matter of minutes, right? Public or private. So first of all, we're more able to logistically do this at scale, right? And price, while still a challenge when compared to, you know, dumb alternatives, it's no longer prohibitive in most areas now. It's a challenge still, but it's not prohibitive, I wouldn't say, and it's becoming even less so. So as such, some of the major barriers have been removed, or at least moving towards that point. Ultimately, you know, similar to the points we made before as well, to succeed at scale, we're going to have to continue to improve in evidence in the benefits we offer and work to improve the accessibility of smart technology to non-techie consumers. But ultimately, if we can do that successfully, then we may be able to facilitate the larger scale adoption. If you take the rental markets in the UK, there's 4.5 million privately rented properties, but there's over 4 million, so nearly 50% of rental properties are social housing, right? And that's nearly 50% of the rented stock in the UK is social housing, which is either run by local councils in the form of council housing or housing associations. How can it not be part of for the solution, really, when it's such a large proportion of it? So, I mean, often legislation can help with certain things. So it's ultimately how do you make it relevant for the local authority and how do you interest them is a question there. Essentially, the reason we are getting really involved in a project at the moment is because there's an act called the Homes Act, which came into force. Basically, it relates to rental properties being fit for human habitation, right? It ensures that landlords don't force their tenants to live in properties that are dangerous or unhealthy. Well, the point is here, there are loads of different things that landlords now need to be conscious of, and smart technologies offer a great solution for loads of these. I mean, in our example, we're discussing air quality in this arena because the legislation makes landlords responsible for issues relating to radon, airborne chemicals, or mould and damp, basically caused by, you know, high humidity. So all things our products monitor for. And the point here is that using smart technology is the most sensible way to mitigate for them and allows them to do so remotely through using cloud technologies, etc. So essentially, local governments should be looking at technologies like smart technologies as quite literally the smartest solution to the challenges they face. You know, we absolutely should involve them. And in fact, I would probably suggest they're crucial to us realising the true scale which we're all striving for.
And I think that's such a powerful thing. Obviously, government brings in legislation to improve health and well-being and puts that responsibility with landlords. Do you think there's an element there where you're having to develop the software behind sort of the monitoring systems there to enable that value to be passed on to the person like living in the house as well, so that they're able to access that information as much as the landlord and make steps to ensure that they're keeping the property in good stead by obviously ensuring that the humidity levels are kept to a good level and that kind of thing?
Well, it's a really good question, and I think it's one we don't have a fully formed answer to yet. Mm. It's because, basically, with our technology, we have the ability for the data to be kept privately. I think what we would really like to get to, and really like to offer, is the solution whereby the landlords can choose, right? Yeah. And so, therefore, there can be a decision as to whether it's landlord-only or landlord and tenant. I mean, I'd suggest in an ideal world, the tenants would have access to that data and therefore they'd be able to be empowered and make their own decisions, which is kind of a lot of the point of what we do, really, is to improve, and what we're talking about here today is improving health and well-being. And if we're keeping that data private, how can people do that? However, I suppose in this example, I suppose of landlords and local authorities, is there may well be cases where they don't want the tenants to see it, and we also, as the purchaser, may have to respect that decision.
Yes, definitely. But then there's also a really good use case for people who are in rented accommodation. So a lot of consumers feel that smart home isn't for people who rent, that it is a homeowner's thing and that they're not able to do it. Whereas from my personal experience, I found that devices were a great way of personalising the home I was living in. And something that I could take away with me to when I, you know, moved into my next house, but also made vast improvements to my lifestyle and my life. And I think, again, this is where something like AirThings is very, very important. Could you see then in the future that there might be interoperability between brands is going to be really, really key to really deliver information that works together, so that there might be an opportunity to create a, say for example, a landlord dashboard that had AirThings information plugged in with other information throughout that household, or even for renters or homeowners, so they get a one view health picture of their home and how it's performing?
I think that's the that's really our kind of, I guess, kind of the holy grail when it comes to this sort of space. You know, ultimately having all the information in one place, easily digestible, is of course the best solution. It's what I think all brands are working for individually anyway.
Yeah.
To try and, you know, do that, do the best job with that as they can do. But yeah, of course. I mean, ultimately, how do we all speak the same language? That's not easy. I'm not necessarily an expert on that side of things, like I should state, but there certainly are challenges in that way, as obviously companies work independently. But how do we all speak the same language? How do we all interact well together? And where can we create these, I guess synergies, but not just synergies, really. It's more integrations and compatibilities, cooperations.
Again, I think that's such a key part of just not just for the health and well-being part of smart home, but just smart home in general as an industry. is actually that interoperability, because no manufacturer does every single thing that a consumer is going to want or need. And having that bigger picture, and I would say not even just in the home, but their connected life picture, how it interacts with wearables and what they're doing, is really where the big benefits are going to come. How do you think smart home solutions will work with our wearables to have like a seamless, connected and smarter lifestyle for consumers, so that they're able to sort of not only improve their home health, but when they're out on the go as well?
I think we interact with our wearables, and then often separately with our smart home devices, and that happens quite frequently. The biggest, I guess, well, not maybe the biggest exception, but yeah, that probably is a bit different with things like security, where people want to get updates and notifications to wearables, etc. But as we progress both areas, I think it would be surprising, to be honest, if wearables or smart home didn't get a lot more connected. You know, it has the potential to be the most convenient way to manage our smart home, if we're able to harness the potential. I mean, I don't know how exactly that's going to look, how that's going to develop, but as I say, it has that potential. You know, as an example, maybe a wearable might track your body temperature and adjust the temperature in your home accordingly to previously set parameters. I don't know. Or could, you know, develop the ability for users to adjust entertainment choices via wearables rather than having to, you know, use voice commands, either pick a phone. I guess some of these things we're going to have to learn how consumers want to use them, which, you know, as I say, the wearables companies might have good insight into, but I suspect that there's a lot more work to be done.
That's a really interesting thing, in the sense that there's a future of testing consumers at scale as more of them adopt having these devices, is looking at how we can make improvements and make them smarter and make them interact better by seeing how they use it. Because again, it's a very fine line of being helpful to being invasive. So for example, like you were saying, my Fitbit may tell me that my sleeping patterns is off. One of the factors of sleeping could be either the air quality in my room or the temperature, and so that it automatically interacts with my smart home to try and produce better environment for me to be sleeping in. But it might not be something I've asked it to do, and therefore I guess it's a level of testing. Where do you think that line is, that will, from being sort of super helpful to being slightly invasive?
Sure. As opposed, that's exactly where the line needs to be drawn, I think, is an open question. There's a big discussion within smart home around data, use of data privacy. Obviously high profile examples in recent, well, months and years actually now, but you know, whether it be things like Cambridge Analytica or whatever, you know, it doesn't really matter as well sometimes whether it's even smart home related. If it's tech related, it's smart home related, because we fall into the same bubble for a lot of people. So as broader tech industry, we need to work on trust and work on ensuring that data is managed across the board responsibly. And then of course we need to understand better how to communicate with our consumers as to the use of that data, you know, understanding how to utilize it best so that it's a force for good rather than a potentially, you know, malevolent one.
And I guess from what you're saying, is giving that power to the consumer through making them understand where the data is going and how it's going to be used and how it's going to be implemented and what that really means for them. Because the next stage of that, and we were talking about in a previous episode about health and about care in the community, and one of the things they were talking about is there's a point where sharing some of the data, particularly if it's protected and anonymized, is really, really useful for local social services support and local doctors, because they can see certain things that you might not be aware of and be able to proactively talk to you about upcoming or potential health concerns through the data that we're carrying. And again, that's an amazing thing to be able to do. But again, it's that line with data privacy and people feeling a bit like they're being monitored constantly. So I guess there's a responsibility from the industry to educate and empower people to make their own choices and to improve their health using that data, but not necessarily to give that data to anybody else to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately, it goes back to a similar point, but on a macro level, really. You know, when we talked earlier about how smart technology can empower us in the home, it was about, we're getting all this data now, we can now use it, right? So we're gathering a large amount of data in our individual environments, which can improve our our health and well-being. Well, it wouldn't it be fantastic if we could ensure that that the data would be used responsibly, and then we could, I guess, macroize it. Yeah. That's definitely not a word.
But I like macro, it though.
Macro the hell out of it, right? And then use that on a national or potentially, you know, international, global basis to improve the way in which societies live. That's hugely powerful, but also, of course, potentially scary and potentially risky if we are not responsible in how we set this up. The time is now to be making sure that we channel our technologies and the data usage around them in the right, the appropriate, the responsible manner.
I think that's really, really interesting and powerful point, because you even looking at how the response to the coronavirus and how we're sharing data there and enabling us to sort of lock down certain areas of the country better. And again, because it's not something we've faced before, having an element where you are planning for that data sharing ahead and creating the ideal world could make us more responsive to public health crises in the future.
I think it forms one really important reason why we should go down that path, but only one. I think in general, in the way we run societies, not just health even, but the way we run societies, there's a lot of benefits here. But absolutely, in health in general, for sure, and then, you know, crises such as a global pandemic, absolutely. You know, there's ultimately it's having a society where the technologies adapt to it and improve it, basically.
I totally agree, and I think it's making better environments for us to inhabit. So going slightly away from the home, if we look at, obviously then we might not be in offices as much during the week, but we still probably will be in them occasionally, or some of us will be still going to work in offices or retail spaces or any places of work. And then even if you look at, say, schools and hospitals, having something like an air quality monitoring device might be really beneficial in those spaces. Is that something that AirThings is moving into, or do you see it's something that they would do in the future, or is it problematic at that scale because it's lots of different people in that building who might not necessarily want their air quality being monitored?
No, absolutely. It's something we do already. Mm-hmm. So we have a sort of a building solutions division, which work on all sorts of things, whether that be, you know, skyscrapers, factories, all sorts of different areas. You know, it really depends on which environment we're talking about, but absolutely it's something we already do. So, you know, in my day-to-day life, I focus very much, I suppose, on more consumer. But absolutely, we have a separate division, and it's, you know, when we talk, going back, we talked about scale. Well, this is part of life, right? So, you know, yes, more people are going to be working from home now. So absolutely, in my side of the world, you know, we're increasingly relevant. But because global health is a heightened issue, particularly at the moment, workplaces and health in workplaces is increasingly, I guess, important as well to people. And therefore, as AirThings increases in relevance in the home, it absolutely increases in relevance in the workplace. And as I say, we've been doing lots of work in that space and will continue to do so.
And I guess it's something that we've written about through our blog recently a lot, is there's this growing B2B opportunity with the smart home industry, because small businesses looking to how they can become more, so the offices become healthier and more COVID secure, we'll be looking for technology that can do it. And again, having different smart technology devices already out there, the case is just educating them on what they need and how to implement it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately it goes back to communication for us all, really.
Yeah.
You know, explaining what we do better, how we do what we do, and how we could all interact in some sort of smart, seamless ecosystem that improves all of our daily lives.
So there's another element to AirThings that I was really fascinated about, is that in terms of technology in general, I'm always very interested in see how this affects the future generations. But I know that AirThings actively works and partners with mother and baby sort of retailers to offer their solution up. Why does it have a particular importance, do you think, in nursery spaces with babies?
I'm sure we can all relate to it being so important to make sure that our loved ones, particularly the little loved ones,
yes,
are in a stable, healthy environment. And you know, they may not spend quite as long in their bedrooms as we would like at night, perhaps. But nevertheless, they spend an awful lot of time in there. And you know, one of the things that we're guilty of, I think, with young children, is we seal their rooms up because we don't want any nasty things to get in there. You know, so we don't want them to get too cold in the night, so we make them all really cosy. And of course, we should do all these things to make sure they're comfortable. But what also happens is we often seal the room up, and then lots of, I suppose, individual components of the air, which can be fairly benign in low quantities, can build up and then become harmful. And it may not be, it may just be a case of affecting the comfort, or it could be a case of affecting the health. I think that ultimately it's really important for adults, as it is for children, to be thinking about their indoor air quality. But quite naturally, I think parents are more sensitive when their children are young to this. I was at the baby show, which is a large event a few months ago, when we were able to go to events.
Yeah.
I remember these days. There's thousands and thousands of parents, many of them, you know, expecting, I'm sure, essentially shopping for and finding out what products are out there and buying things they'd never buy before or never really thought about, in all sorts of different products that actually they're starting to switch onto it for the first time. So, you know, I guess from our perspective, we just we know that we've got a relevant solution. And with parents, we find a group that that's very, very open to listening to us, are very interested in ensuring that their baby's health is great, not just what they put in the body, not just what they wear, but what they breathe, everything about their whole environment and lifestyle.
I guess it's such a fundamental thing, the air that we breathe. But if you think about the considerations for a healthy lifestyle, the first couple of things that we tend to think about is what we eat and how we exercise. Is that something that you find you sort of mentioned potentially challenging to educate some people on the importance of? Obviously, that's kind of changed recently and more people are thinking about it. But is it almost a kind of aha moment for people when they go, oh, actually, no, I don't really consider about the air I breathe?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think if we went back, say, 10, 20 years ago, and no one really would have thought about it much. And since then, we've obviously had a massive increase in, you know, in awareness of outdoor air pollution first.
Mm.
I think, let's say, you know, 80s and 90s, outdoor air pollution, we definitely knew it was an issue in London. But, you know, I think we often thought of big far-off cities with smog covering them, and that was air pollution, and it wasn't a problem we had to really worry about. And what's become, I guess, increasingly clear to people is that, A, it's something we have to think about, but not just outdoors. We need to be thinking outdoors, you know, and indoors. And so, ultimately, the awareness has been growing and will continue to do so. You know, we see trends not just in our direct space, but in general, you know, with health and wellness being increasingly important to people as they understand the impact it can have. You know, we make 23,000 breaths a day. We care so much about what we put in our bodies in terms of food and drink, and we really, really careful about what we do, and then we're quite happy to breathe unhealthy air. That doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it doesn't at all. And considering it's such an important part of how stressed we feel, our mental clarity, to just our general well-being, it's funny how low down on the list of considerations when you're not feeling quite right in a room. So for example, I had an AirThings device installed in an office space I was working in, and every afternoon about 3 o'clock I was getting headaches, and I thought it was to do with maybe I was having too many coffees, or I thought it might have been something to eat, and I tried all of that and it still wasn't working. And then I noticed consistently on the AirThings device, once we installed it, that the CO2 levels in my office were getting sky high, and I realised the ventilation wasn't very good, and had I not had that device telling me that, I would have carried on thinking, what's going on? It's totally unhealthy. Do you think it's a really important way of encouraging people if for example, you can educate people on healthy air, that also has a knock-on effect at making them healthier in other ways. So, for example, getting them outside more to exercise, because they've started to tackle one area, that it might encourage them to do something else about other areas of their health.
Oh, absolutely, of course. I mean, I think in general, the more interested you become in a topic, and that topic in this case is your own health, but the more interested you become in a topic, the more you explore other areas of developing that. So in this case, if we can get people to interact on their home health and their wellness, then it would be strange almost if it stopped at the front door, you know, and in this case, inside the front door. But it'd be strange if when they went out, they didn't continue that those observations and those thought processes and so on and so forth. Absolutely.
And again, I guess they're then educating the rest of their family, and it has a, do you think there'll be a trickle down effect? Like you say, if we, to sort of steal the analogy from earlier, if we plan the vision for the future and try and implement it now, that actually by educating the current generation with the technology that we've already got, it's going to make it better for future generations.
Well, absolutely. You'd hope that it would just be a natural development through generations, as one passes on their knowledge to the next, you know, gradually, and everyone continues to develop on the learnings that we've all got. It becomes one sort of seamless development process would be the trend. I mean, people have always cared about their air quality. If you go to Homebase or B&Q or all places like that, there's still huge numbers of air products. But the difference is that there isn't necessarily a smart or joined up way of why people are doing that, and that's why smart technology comes into this and helps people to make better informed decisions.
So finally, I just want to talk to you about where you feel is the future for smart home and how it can make a difference to people's lives.
Well, that's a pretty big question.
That's massive. End on a big one.
Sure. Well, I guess it goes back to some of the topics we've discussed through this. I think the seamlessness and interconnectedness is really important. So ultimately, wouldn't it be great if you can specify the way that you want to live your life, really, I suppose. You know, we talked in a very simplistic manner about the parameters with IFT earlier, right? And that you can make decisions about your life. Well, start doing that on the grander scale. So these are the ways I want to live my life. These are the ways I want to be healthy. These are the ways I want my environment to be, to look, to feel, all these different things. And then to not have to interact that consciously, regularly with smart technologies, for them to be smart, right? That's what we're supposed to be. For them to be truly smart and to start to understand the consumer better and their needs. I think that's really where we're heading towards. But there's a lot of bumps and a lot of challenges to get better and better at that. But that's the fun of it, really.
It is. It's almost like the nature of that try and test sort of thing that gets us the best outcome if we're constantly reevaluating and are in that mindset of reevaluating where we're going. When you were talking about that, it gave me a wonderful image of in my head that every year you sort of sit down and do a health MOT for the year, and you sit there and you change the parameters or put in the parameters that you need for your new year start, and your home just automatically picks those up and starts to make those improvements over the year. Again, it's very Star Trek, and I don't know when we'd get there, if it would be in the next decade or not.
I guess how that looks is, you know, is very open to discussion, interpretation, all that will happen. You know, how do we design that so that people really adopt that successfully into their lives? I don't know necessarily the answers to that, but in some form, that's kind of how I view us going.
Well, it's been wonderful to have you on the podcast, Daniel, and we've covered some incredible topics. Thank you so much for taking part.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
And our huge thanks to Daniel Bastoni at Airthings for joining us on today's episode. Remember, if you want to get in touch, you can email us at hello@beaconagency.co.uk. But for now, thank you very much for joining us today.